listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 459.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station, and this, the first podcast of a series of four recorded at the photography show at the NEC in March 2018. The majority of our listeners are not only lovers of the great outdoors, but they also enjoy capturing their adventures in either photo or video or both to look back on time and time again. Yes, you can use your phone, however, they have their limits, and with technology advancing at such a rate, producing quality 4K video and incredibly detailed images, I made it my mission this year to talk direct to the main camera brands, to get their good, better, best suggestions for cameras suitable for us outdoor types. The emails went out weeks ago, and I stipulated to each brand the importance of such things as battery life, charging from USB, weather resistance, bulk, weight, image and video quality, apps, and any other additional features such as time-lapse, etc. Everything was set, and it all looked like the Monday, the traditional press day, would be the ideal time to get their fullest attention. Not too busy, and people not too exhausted from the weekend. However, on the Sunday, it snowed, which meant all the visitors who intended to visit that day arrived on the Monday instead. When Andy and I first got there, it was quiet, but it soon became packed, and getting the fullest attention from the brands became quite a challenge. Andy, on the other hand, started the day in a much more relaxed fashion.
Well, here we are again, back at a major photography show. It's a few years now since Bob and I have tackled one of these, which is maybe not a bad thing, because coming every year, you tend to see very incremental progress, whereas this year, I'm looking forward to see some real changes. So the manic nature of the public days on Saturday and Sunday have died down a bit, and we're here for predominantly the trade part of the show. Bob has lined up interviews with many of the major camera manufacturers, and my job is to scour the halls looking for things that really are of use and of interest to the outdoor enthusiast. So I'm looking for things that are portable, light, and maybe generally innovative as well. And we'll see if we can talk to some of our old friends, find some new ones, and also look at some of the photographic services that are on offer as well. So, anyway, it's nice to be here. It's not too manic. And so off I go. I'll see you later.
My first interview, and probably the easiest of the day, was with Sam Pilling, image specialist for Sony UK. His selection of good, better, best was the Sony A5100, the A6500, and the new A7 Mark III, plus a very interesting battery-charging cum power bank unit called the MQZ1. Now, I realise these product numbers may be hard to follow, so please check out the photos and links on the outdoorstation.co.uk website to get all the full details.
The A5100 is a very small and compact interchangeable lens camera. It's mirrorless, which makes it smaller, and it features a 180-degree screen, so if you're into logging, vlogging, or even just simple self-portraits while you're out and about, this is a great camera to use. Even though it's very, very small, it features phase autofocus. That means the autofocus system found in DSLR, so it's incredibly fast to focus. So if you want to shoot wildlife, moving objects, it's great. It also charges via USB, so if you're out shooting and you come across a USB point, you can charge the battery up, and it's capable of shooting full 1080p video as well. So as well as fantastic stills, you'll have sharp video throughout.
So does it shoot RAW and JPEG?
Absolutely, yes. It shoots RAW, JPEG. It's also capable of shooting video as well in a variety of different formats. If you want to instantly share your JPEG files, or if you want to shoot an MP4 and share that, you can transfer the footage straight to your mobile phone as well. So if you're out for a few days, but you want to keep in touch with social media, uploading your blog, uploading your videos, then this makes workflow really easy. You could share straight to a tablet to edit before uploading. It's really convenient.
It doesn't do 4K, I trust.
This particular model doesn't do 4K. We do have compact system cameras in the range that do offer 4K. This particular one does not.
And it's an interchangeable lens, so that's the E-mount lens, so that's interchangeable across your range, yeah?
Yes, it's compatible with a huge different variety of lenses. We do standard portrait lenses, wide angle, telephoto, and because it's E-mount, you could even use our range of full-frame lenses on there as well. It gives you a huge range of lenses to choose from.
So that's a 1.5, 1.6 multiplication?
Yes, 1.5, where it makes it nice and easy to work out.
What about the weather resistance of cameras in general and that particular model?
So with this particular one, we don't state a particular weather resistance. From personal experience, I've got wet with my cameras plenty of times and I've dropped various drinks on them and they are very, very hard wearing, but we don't offer an official status when it comes to the weather sealing. Just the main thing is to get a nice case, look after your camera, you'll be fine.
And finally, the one thing about Sony, I've got Sony cameras myself, is the battery life does tend to be a bit shorter than you'd anticipate sometimes. Have they improved that at all across the range, or is Sony looking at the battery durability?
This new battery that we've introduced in some of our A7 series, the Z series battery, is over 2.2 times the power of our original W series battery. It's independently super rated, and if you use it in something like an A7 Mark III, which we have here, you'll get over 700 shots from it. So it's vastly different. And we still offer the convenient range of USB chargers for existing W series. It's always great to take a spare battery with you, and if you can simply plug in and charge via USB, you shouldn't get caught short. But yes, the Z series battery in our newer cameras is a real powerhouse.
And so does the Z series fit the older, the 5100 and the
models? Unfortunately, it's larger, so it won't fit inside the existing battery housing. But obviously carrying a second W series battery will stop you from getting caught short with the 5100.
Okay. And the price point on the 5100?
The estimated street price is around £400.
Now, the 5100 doesn't have a viewfinder, so moving further up the food chain, what would be the next one you'd recommend for my listeners?
Well, the camera that I went out with last night is the A6500. It's still APS-C, but it now introduces a viewfinder. It introduces a touchscreen panel. It's got 425 phase autofocus points and focuses in 0.05 seconds, but it's still got the key features of Wi-Fi and NFC. This particular one will do full 4K video. It's a really versatile unit, and it's got lots of physical controls. So if you're the sort of person who enjoys changing your aperture, your shutter, or even shooting in full manual, this camera's more than capable of doing it.
As regards the video mode, I know the screen tilts but doesn't flip around. It does 4K as well as HD.
Yes, it shoots in full 4K, and although it doesn't flip round, it does angle on various different axes in order to, if you're shooting from behind a crowd or if you're shooting some low-level shooting, you want to tilt it up towards yourself, you still have those options. But yeah, it'll do 1080p, it'll do 4K, and in a variety of different formats. So if you want to shoot 1080p in MP4 to make it more shareable, as opposed to some of the professional formats we offer, then it's more than possible.
And it shares the same batteries and same lenses, obviously, the 5100.
Absolutely, yes. But one of the differences between this and the 5100 is you can shoot whilst charging via USB. With the 5100, you're either charging or you're shooting. The A6000, you could connect it to an external power pack and continue to shoot whilst you're charging at the same time.
Let me just ask you that question again, just for clarity's sake. We have the 6000, the 6300, and you've got the 6500.
Yep.
Could you just mention the charging from USB? Because that's really important to most mobile people.
When we brought out the 6300, that was the first point that you can shoot and charge at the same time. A6000, you can charge via a power bank, via USB, no problem. But it's either shooting or it's charging, one or the other. 6300 gives you the feature to have a large power bank in your bag, tether it to the camera via USB, and continue to shoot whilst charging. Same with the 6500, it's the model above.
Lovely. And the price again on the 6500 at the moment?
£550, estimated street price.
So, going to the top of the selection of the three, the good, better, best, we have the A7 III. Now that's recently released, isn't it?
Yeah, this is actually the first major UK trade show we've been able to show the camera at. It's available for sale here today, and it's been extremely popular. In fact, I think we're probably going to run out of stock today on the retailer stores.
So let's go through the key features then. We're talking, obviously, the charging, the weatherproofing, as well as the actual features of the camera itself.
Well, I'm glad to say that this is a weather-sealed camera. The ports and connections are sealed against moisture, dust, the elements, that sort of thing. Charging-wise, it's a similar sort of message to the 6500. You can shoot and charge at the same time. And it does feature that bigger Z series battery, so over 700 shots from a single charge. The camera itself is an improvement on our original A7 II. It features 693 phase autofocus points, so moving objects are very, very easy to frame and capture. It features our technology eye autofocus, so if you're out with the family or friends, it'll focus on the nearest eye to the camera. And it also has up to 10 frames per second continuous shooting. And that, for wildlife enthusiasts, can be completely silent if you want. If you're out and about, you see wildlife, birds, that sort of thing, and you don't want the intrusion of the clacking of a shutter, even though this is a full-frame camera, it'll shoot completely silently at 10 frames a second.
I've read certain things about it saying that the continual shooting is so fast, it's almost as fast as video.
Well, it almost gives you an issue that you're going to have to edit all those pictures that you shoot. So when you're shooting 10 frames per second, you're guaranteed to capture the perfect moment. But when you get back after, if it's a long week of shooting, you're going to have an awful lot of pictures to review. And of course, the camera being 24 megapixels, they're fantastic quality. And this is a brand new sensor inside this camera. We've used what we call a backlit sensor. We take the wiring that's normally sat on the front of the sensor, put it on the back. It improves the size of our photo sites, our pixels, our photo diodes. That means when you're shooting in low light, especially maybe in the early evening, outdoors, maybe in a forest where there's a canopy cutting off the sunlight, this will get brilliant sharp images in really difficult conditions.
Okay, one practical question then. The screen again, is it a tilt screen or a flip screen that's on the back?
It's a multi-angle tilt screen. I'm glad you brought it up because there's two new additions to the Mark III. One of which is a touchscreen feature on the touchscreen, so you can easily drag your focus point to wherever you want it. And we've also added a joystick. The joystick allows you to quickly navigate the menus, but also move around your focus points at will, especially when looking through the electronic OLED viewfinder, so that if you are trying to capture a particular point of focus, it's extremely easy to do.
Well, all these cameras have the same demands on power, and I know there is an additional accessory that you wanted to talk about, which was sort of a multi-charging unit, which may be of interest to a lot of people.
Yeah, the MPA MQZ1 is a battery unit which will store up to four batteries at a single time. That will then allow you to either charge four batteries in one go, or alternatively, using the battery attachment, you can actually run your camera from four batteries in a single power pack, which in theory on something like the A7 Mark III will give you over 3,000 shots off a single pack. It also, like I say, can charge the four batteries at the same time. And it'll run off 12 volts, so if you're situated in a caravan or somewhere with 12 volt power, then you can fully charge your unit as well.
So these will take all the size batteries relevant to the cameras we're talking about, the new batteries as well as the standard ones, and it runs off the mains and 12 volts, am I correct?
Yes, and it's really, really easy to use it as either a camera battery power, or alternatively, you can use it as a USB power pack as well.
So final question then, the price on the A7 III and the charger?
The A7 III has got an estimated street price of £2,000. The MPA MQZ1 is available for around about £380 on the high street. It's also worth saying as well with this particular product, just for clarity, it uses the Z series battery, but it's compatible with W series battery products. So you would put up to four Z series battery in this unit, use it to charge those batteries, but then you could run something like an A6500, an A7 Mark II off the unit, just the same as if you were plugged into one of the new A7 IIIs.
The Outdoor Station is your one-stop shop for audio and video entertainment for the self-powered traveller. You can find us online, on internet radio, on smartphones, on smart TVs, on YouTube, on Apple TV, on Now TV, and on Facebook. You can also stream us live via the iTunes app or TuneIn radio app. The list is continually expanding, and for full details of how to subscribe, download, or stream and enjoy our massive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
You know, one of the things that many people recommend is that if you're serious about your photography and your outdoor photography, it is worth investing in a proper workshop, a proper training program. I'm with Chris Simmons here from Chris Simmons Photography, who is promoting a series of Cornish seascape workshops. And Chris, just looking at some of the photographs here, some of them are pretty stunning.
Thank you. The idea behind my workshop courses is that the sea is a fundamental part of the compositional consideration. And so what I teach down in the workshops is making sure that you're appreciating, you're reading what the sea is doing, you're going to be at the right place at the right time to catch the tide. And the great thing is, being in Cornwall, is you shoot the sunrise over on the south coast. We come back, we do post-processing tuition using RAW and Photoshop. And then we can go over onto the Atlantic coast to shoot the sundown. And the courses run from 2 to 5 days in duration, and they go from beginner to diversifying pro.
Yeah, I'd not thought about Cornwall like that, but that's right, isn't
it? It's the ideal place. I mean, it is the ideal place.
Yeah, one of the great things about seascapes is that, you know, in that sea and in that sky, you've got a tremendous amount of detail. But to make sure it's not flat or...
Absolutely.
You know.
It's capturing the emotion. The sea is a great indicator. It tells you what the weather is. It tells you how strong the wind is. And if you can capture the light and the reflection and the movement and that motion, and without making it, as you say, go flat, then I think that's a real key part of capturing the essence of a seascape.
Now, these days, you know, with camera technology zooming ahead at pace, I mean, actually, you can get some pretty fine kit for a reasonable investment now, can't you? So we're really suggesting that once you've done that, you know, it's not all about the kit, as we've all known for years, but investing in the technique is pretty important. As you say, you're doing 2-day courses and 5-day courses.
It runs from 2 days to 5 days in duration. And that bases around time of the year, because if you're getting up to shoot the blue hour, there, and we're going down to, say, Porthcurno, right down by Land's End, then that's quite an early start. And then with the sundown...
Yes, you might want to take advantage of the winter months.
Exactly. And so you can work... A 5-day course in July is a very long day, is a long day indeed. But no, for me, it's about capturing the image in camera and then refining it using RAW and Photoshop. So it's all about the in-camera skills.
So you're dealing with the skill on site, but you're also looking at post production in that
Absolutely.
Course.
I've been working professionally with Photoshop for around 30 years, and so now we've moved down to Cornwall. My passion is seascapes, and now I can teach refining moves using the most potent combination of fine art post-processing tools.
So take me quickly through your 5-day course, and what would I expect to have covered, and also where do you think I would be at the end of that?
Right, it's as I say, it runs from beginner to diversifying pro. So if you were coming along and you've got a good grasp of what you're doing with your DSLR, but perhaps you're not using your manual settings so much, and maybe you're not, it's about manual settings, hyperfocal focusing, and then looking at filtering, and looking at the difference that the time, shooting, getting the right time to get the movement, get the motion, get the textures. And as I said, filtering to make sure you're getting the reflections. And then bringing it back into the post-processing, where sometimes filters can take a little bit of the detail out of the sky. So it's a case of using clever techniques that bring back that punch, the dynamics, into the sky. So that's what you would learn.
Yeah, you and I are kind of, I guess, around about the same age range. We learn with manual exposure and manual focusing. Yeah. But I'm struck by, I've got a couple of nephews who've done video and photography degrees.
Yeah.
And I'm still struck by how uncomfortable they are with manual exposure. And I think if you really want to get the best out of the landscape or the seascape, really, giving yourself the time and space to be comfortable with that so it becomes second nature almost is still very important.
Absolutely. It's the essential part of using a camera. For me, a camera is a creative tool. It's a brush, but it needs to be controlled, and you need to know exactly what you're doing. If you can bring F18 along with ISO 100 and there is that magic minute when brings it down to a fifth of a second, then that is a glorious time of the morning or of the sundown, and that is when you really start playing with your imagery. So that's the key to this course.
Well, you can hear the passion in Chris's voice there for seascapes and for Cornwall. The images here are stunning, and you know, if you've got time for the 5 days and you really want to build that confidence, I guess that's great, but I guess you can also pick up a lot in a weekend as well.
Oh yeah, well, we run the courses midweek because it avoids the crowds that way, but it's all of it. In 2 days you can come down, it goes from midday then through to the midday the 2 days following, so you'll get to shoot a couple of sunrises and a sunset, and it's all about chest waders and climbing boots and going out and shooting places that they probably would never have found. Beautiful little hidden away gems that are located around Cornwall.
And that's great for our audience, many of whom are walkers and coastal walkers, and the great thing about that is you're walking along the coastal baths, you're getting into those little coves and those little creeks, and I mean, I don't know, I can spend hours and hours photographing the sea.
Absolutely.
Rocks with different exposures. Chris, thanks very much. Chris Simmons Photography, Cornish Seascape Workshops, a lot of passion, lots of enthusiasm, and some great, great photos.
Thank you very much indeed.
Lovely. Thank you.
Drones. You either love them or you hate them. Either way, there's no denying they can provide some impressive and professional video aspects and drama to your adventures when everything is viewed from above. I particularly wanted to see and find out more about the recently released DJI Mavic Air. Was it small enough to be packed into an average size rucksack, and was it able to be flown with ease? It didn't disappoint, as Pete Rawlinson, the DJI specialist for London Camera Exchange, explains.
So for us in the Mavic Air, it's a really small unit now. What's beautiful about it is that it's so tiny, you can fit it in the, sort of your pocket, the backpack. It's now part of your kit bag. It's no longer your sacrificing vital kit like water, food when you're going out into the hills for the day, where I found with my Phantom, that's what I struggled with. I took it out, I will fly it because I've been carrying it all day. If I take the Air and the weather's not quite right for it, I don't feel like I need to take it out and fly. It's in my bag, I'm quite happy. Feature-wise, you can be using the controller, so you can take full manual control over it. You can be as clever as you want. If you're an experienced pilot, you've got all the control functionality you're used to from the other platforms. If you're new to it and you just want to get some really awesome shots, but you don't want to spend the time learning to fly, you've got something called Quick Shots in here. So it's preset mode. So you've got one called Boomerang, where it will basically like take an orbit around yourself, but it will kind of rise up and come down at the key moments. And it just basically shows off where you are. You know, if you're stood on top of the mountain, for instance, it will give you that visual impact that you're looking for. You've got one called Asteroid, where it basically backs away from you at a 45 degree angle. So it's almost taking what we call a drone-y shot. So it almost reveals where you are. And it takes a 360. It all processes it internally within about 2 minutes. And then you have this tiny planet mode, basically, which then swerves down and comes into your video if you stood there in the shot. It can do 4K video recording, so really high resolution video recording. It can do 12 megapixel stills. You can shoot JPEGs obviously there. In the app, you can download it straight across to your phone and edit them, upload them. It's got a three-way mechanical gimbal on there, so super steady when it's kicking around in any wind or anything, so you're still getting that buttery smooth motion. Avoidance software can keep going on. So in the front, in the back, basically will pick up on objects and obstacles that are in the way, so you don't need to worry as much. If you're flying towards something, the drone will pick up that and it will basically try to avoid it as best it can.
Okay, so let's just backtrack slightly. You're obviously an expert in the field and a fan, which I fully understand, but explain it to people that are considering this perhaps for the first time. And let's give you a practical situation and you tell me how it would perform in that situation if you would. So if somebody's out in the wilds and they're walking up a steep bank or they're doing a climb perhaps up a rock face or whatever, and they're at the bottom of their climb and they want to start it off and get some dramatic shots of them doing that, and they get to the top and they want it to be retrieved at the top, what equipment would they need? Do they need the full controller and all the accessories, or can they just do that from, I don't know, from hand movements or from their phone, and retrieving it as well? You know, that's an important part, obviously.
So there is gesture control on the drone. So that's basically where you don't need to have a controller on you. You would need the controller and the app to basically say that's the mode you want to go into.
So you need a smartphone before you start, right?
You do indeed, yeah. Okay. That allows you to then put your hand out when drone's on the floor. That instigates it to idle and then take off and hover in front of you. At that point, it's like actively tracking yourself. You can tell it to go further away with gestures. You can get it to come closer to yourself.
Can I just interrupt you there? Because I've seen some video clips of this happening, and obviously you can see it working, but there also is this feeling of, well, is this going to be a picture of me flapping my arms around, or will it go further away and then I can carry on doing what I'm doing, or does it automatically come back, you know?
So you don't need to start recording straight away. So you can set it up with your hands, so when you're flapping around as such and looking a bit crazy, dancing with your drone, you can get it into the position you want it to be in. At that point, you basically make like the picture window sign with your fingers, and that will start a video recording. At that point, it's actively tracking you, so you can walk off. If you're mountain biking, it will follow you. If you're climbing up a rock face, it will follow you and track you that way. And then at the end of the shot, you basically hold those fingers back up in the picture frame mode, and that will stop the video from recording then. Then you flap around again to get it come back to you, land it, and you've got your shot, so you don't get any silly footage, unless you want to.
Okay, so going back to the original question then, of somebody walking up a hill and they want, you know, that dramatic shot, they crest the top of the hill and their drone flies up behind them and they see the view, etc. What do they physically need? They need the smartphone, obviously a bit of control, one of the modes I trust?
Yep, so basically in the app you've got lots of different settings. So you've got the normal mode where you're just controlling it with the controller. You go into your quick shot mode and that's where you can basically do the gesture controls and things. I would always recommend you take the controller with you if you get into the top, just in case there was to be a reason that anything went wrong, because you can take manual control back. Just keeps it safe. But in theory, you would be able to gesture control it back to you, land it, pack it up, put it in your bag.
Okay, so let's talk practicalities then. The battery duration, life duration of the battery?
So battery's giving you up to 16 minutes. It does come down to how aggressively you're flying, if it's really windy. So the conditions of the environment are going to take an impact on the battery.
And what about wind? What's the sort of maximum wind conditions it can fly in?
Wind condition wise, I would say you'll be able to fly in sort of the 20 mile an hour. It's going to be wind that you're going to go, I don't want to fly a drone in, before you're going to back away.
Okay, that's reasonable. And the memory card that you require, when you're shooting 4K, how big a card do you have to allocate for, I don't know, 20 minutes worth of 4K?
20 minutes of 4K you'll probably be able to get away with on a 32 gig card quite happily. You'd get a couple of full flights out of that in 4K.
Okay, and then the biggest thing, people obviously who are out for several days at a time, what about charging? That's probably the big question. Can they charge direct to this from a power bank, from a USB power bank?
Unfortunately, on the Mavic Air at the moment, you can't do that. We do have one called the Spark, which again is quite small. That does allow you to charge internally through the drone from a power bank. But for the Mavic Air, because of the way the battery is designed at the moment, yeah, you would need to have a power source. The batteries are very small, like the drone, obviously. So you get when you sort of buy the combo pack, you get a small pouch, and you can put all the batteries in there. So I've got about three at the moment, I think it is. So charge them up before you go, and then, yeah, go out and enjoy yourself.
And so the actual charging unit, I'm just physically thinking about how physically big it is or heavy. Is it as big as the drone?
No, it's smaller than the drone. So you could just go out with the transformer block, almost like what you're used to from like laptops and things, but a smaller scale one. So you need your power plug, that goes into transformer plug, and there's a cable which goes direct to the battery. But you can also get quite a slim, compact unit which unfolds, which is the battery charging hub, and you put four batteries on there. So if you were to arrive somewhere that you could charge up overnight, you could plug it in, put your four batteries in there, and basically you wouldn't have to then wake up, switch your battery over at all. It'd just be fully charged in the morning.
And do they work off USB, or is it purely mains? Do you have to have the power block?
Yeah, it is the power block you need, so yeah.
Okay, well, we're standing, 10, 12 feet away from a Mavic Pro, which is currently flying, and I cannot believe that you can just hear the slightest, in fact, I'll just stick the microphone through the fence. You can just hear that slight wisp of a sound, And there's obviously the Air, which is probably, what, 6 inches long, 2-3 inches deep,
yeah,
and a couple of inches across. It's phenomenally small. In the pack, when you actually buy this, do you get a little protection case so that you can actually shove it in a rucksack and not worry about it?
You do indeed, yeah. It's almost like a taco shell, like these sunglasses. When you open the box up, it's sat on the top. When I first opened mine, I understood how small the Mavic Air was, but I was like, seriously, it cannot be sat in that. Open it up, and yeah, he sat in there quite happily. So, yeah, you can just take the drone out as it is. You don't have to worry about any other bits.
So what's the difference then, in layman's terms then, between the Pro and the Spark, the smaller model?
So between the Spark, you're basically looking at the connectivity between, if you're using it as a controller, it's operating over Wi-Fi. So the distance that it can travel to without any interruptions or interference is reduced compared to what the Mavic Pro can do. The Mavic Pro uses something called OcuSync, which is a far, far more powerful transmission system, which DJI have made. So in the UK, you've got up to 500 meters that you can fly to, or your visual line of sight, whichever is the lesser. And what that basically will mean with OcuSync is that you can fly to, you know, the maximum potential, what you can do, but the interference is far, far reduced. So you've got a real clear representation of what you're shooting and sort of confidence in the craft. The Mavic is obviously a bigger platform than the Spark, but for me, it's more solid. You've got the 4K video in there too, compared to full HD in the Spark. But for me, Spark is a real entry point. It's your friendly family drone. It's the one you take out if you're going down on a family holiday, down to the beach or anything like that. You want to take those little group shots. You're keeping it close to yourself. Mavic will allow you to operate in the same way, but it will also allow you to get those beautiful scenery shots
so
if you want to go.
Or the Pro, so.
Both, to be fair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, absolutely. You could do it with both of them. So it's the next step up. So it's if you want to take that videography or stills that little bit further with the drones and you wanted to just capture kind of the scenery around you. Spark can do it, but not quite as well, I'd say.
Okay. So what's the price point then on the Spark, the Air and the Mavic Pro?
So Spark is around about the £400 to £500 mark. The Mavic Air is about the £700, £750 mark. And then the Pros, so the Mavic Pro, you're looking around about the £1,000, £1,100 mark. There is a Pro Platinum, which is a little bit more, which is the one you were just listening to in the cage. So it's a little bit quieter with the new props, and it gives you a few extra minutes in flight time due to what's called the electronic speed controllers in the arms and the motor efficiency.
So from the videos that I've watched, I can see that the Spark range, as you say, of 500 meters or so, but the Air and the Pro are more like 4 kilometers if you've got the space.
So yeah, it can do that. The technology is there with the distance it could transmit over, but like I said, if you're flying in the UK, you just need to watch what those rules and regs are. So you're still limited to the 500 meter max or your visual line of sight, but it's that interference which you don't have as much, which comes through because of the strength of the signal that you can get in the Mavics.
Finally, sort of, what's the weather resistance? If it's a drizzle or heavy rain, is that going to trouble these sort of crafts?
We never recommend to fly in the rain. They're not weather sealed in any way because we've obviously got open ports on them to let the airflow go through, keep it nice and cool. They can handle it. It's not going to be, you're not going to go out for the day and a bit of drizzle comes down as you're flying and it's going to drop from the sky or anything. You will get it back. It is okay to do. Just take care, clean it off afterwards. The main thing for me when people ask this question is that yes, it will handle it to some level, but you're going to get water on your lens and then you're not going to see what you want to record. So for me, that's why I don't fly in any wet weather. The higher levels, the industrial levels like the M200 series, they have weather sealings to them. That's a whole different ballpark that you're looking at. You know, you're looking at people who are using this on a daily professional basis.
And the final question has to be, really, what are the CAA rules regarding flights and drones? Because obviously the rules are changing all the time at the moment, and I'm unaware of actually where everybody stands with these things.
So the rules haven't changed in a long time, actually. It's just become more apparent to people who are looking at drones or just the general public where they're coming into the public eye more. Like I said before, it's up to 500 metres, but it's your visual line of sight. So as a pilot, you need to be responsible for seeing it physically. It's almost like where we're stood here with the stands and everything. If I flew a drone out, I wouldn't be able to. But if it was empty in here, I couldn't fly around the back of a stand because I haven't got visual line of sight of the drone. So you have to be able to see it. If someone's eyesight wasn't very good, for instance, and they couldn't see the Mavic at 100 metres, they're limited to less than that distance because it's what you can see. So the maximum you could go to is 500 metres away from yourself. You can fly up to 400 metres high, but the same principle applies. You still need to be able to see the drone. Flying around people, vessels, air and vehicles that you're not in control of, you need to stay away from at least 50 metres. that's like a bubble, so it's a circular bubble system. So you can fly over the top of individuals as long as you're 50 meters above them. And if it's like congested areas, so cities and things like that, you need to stay at least 150 meters away. Most of it is common sense and just being considerate to other people out there. You know, if you're enjoying the outdoors, you don't want to have someone annoying you with a drone flying over you and stuff. But I find that when I go out and I'm taking shots, I talk to people that I see, and most of the time they're more intrigued with what I'm doing, and they're more than willing, if they're going up a ridge that I'm following them on, for me to fly alongside and see what they're doing, and, you know, make sure it's showing that, you know, people are enjoying these environments as I do.
Well, that brings us to the end of part one. My thanks to Sam Pilling at Sony UK, Chris Simmons Photography, Pete Rawlinson from DJI, plus, of course, Andy for joining me in what turned out to be a very, very long day. Please check out the website for all the images and links to the products and services we discuss. And stay tuned for more from the 2018 Photography Show at the NEC. Until next time, folks. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.